Hello, and thank you so much for tuning into the Education Burrito, a podcast that unwraps the everyday challenges in learning and teaching in education, exploring the ins and outs and highs and lows and different pedagogy approaches, enhancing student engagement amongst everything in education. My name is Q Sum, and each episode I'll be joined by special guests as we unwrap the Education Burrito. Hello, burrito lovers, and we are back with another podcast at the Education Burrito. Today, I'm so pleased to be joined by someone who loves to drive transformation in education. For example, supporting the community to tackle structural inequality in education effectively by improving the opportunities and outcomes of underrepresented students. Also, I was very pleased to learn that they lead the student attainment team as part of their day job to close gaps in attainment between learners of different ethnic minorities or ethnic backgrounds. Right, if that's not enough, along with a group of students, they recently published a paper on the Ethnicity Awarding Gap Project to understand the experience of students from underrepresented groups. So, without further ado, Tamara Kofi, welcome to the podcast. How are you doing?
Hi. No, it's really lovely to be here. I'm well. Thank you for inviting me. I'm happy to kind of talk through the work I've been doing today.
Amazing stuff, Tamara. So for our listeners who don't know you very well, Tamara, alongside myself, could you just give us a bit of an overview of what it is that you do in your day job?
Yeah, more than happy to. So I work at King's College University in London, and I'm a student outcomes manager for attainment based in our student transitions and outcomes department. So really I kind of work strategically to lead our college community to kind of think about structural inequality as it relates to awarding gaps, specifically those that kind of affect our most underrepresented students, so those from Black, Asian, minority ethnic backgrounds. And then specifically within the kind of student attainment team that I lead, we deliver some kind of strategic projects. So one that looks at kind of having conversations about race and racism in higher education. And another that also kind of, it's actually currently changing at the moment, kind of in line with our new access and participation plan. So I won't say too much, but we'll be kind of looking to kind of really support those student groups. But we also work alongside our faculties, kind of deliver consultation work. But prior to working in this team, actually, I used to work in one of our student experience teams at King's. And that's kind of where I led on the project looking at the ethnicity awarding gap. I think really I'm just passionate about improving and thinking about the holistic student experience, and something I was able to kind of but really happy to still be at King's and kind of focusing on that in this new area of work as well.
Amazing stuff. It feels a bit really weird, Tamara, because you and I haven't actually met before until now. And it's been done, you know, in the past only via email, because we somehow got connected through the Student Engagement in Higher Education journal, which was published earlier on in 2024 this year as part of this special issue, which I convene one of the groups. So it's pretty much the first time that we are chatting live, which sometimes I feel weird when I'm interviewing colleagues for this podcast. But first of all, amazing paper that you published that was titled Ethnicity Awarding Gap Project, Co-creation and Action Research, and a Means of Understanding the Student Experience of Underrepresented Students. So perhaps to start, could you tell us a bit about your project? What was it that you did in terms of, in the context of that paper?
Yeah, really happy to. So I guess there were two main aims. The first really was to try and better understand the student experience of UK domiciled Black, Asian and minority ethnic background students in a specific faculty at King's College London. And the second aim really was to work with students from these backgrounds to really understand actually what factors they believe were contributing to the ethnicity awarding gap. So for this project, I hired 10 students to work as researchers, to kind of deliver focus groups with other students from Black, Asian and minority ethnic backgrounds, understand their student perspectives around kind of structural systemic barriers, really. And I think the great thing about this was definitely working with those students, and we can definitely kind of talk a bit more about that in kind of future as well. But I think what was interesting, I think, with this project is that the focus group really revealed lots of stuff around community and belonging, teaching and learning, but also kind of nuances there, kind of pulling apart things around like the hidden curriculum and different forms of capital and what that meant to students, and lots of stuff also around differences in kind of expectations versus reality of studying in higher education, I think, for this student group. So it was really exciting. The project actually ran in October to December 2022, which feels like a lifetime ago now. But I think what was amazing out of kind of doing this project really is that at a faculty level, we really wanted to ensure that this co-creation was meaningful and that the work that the students did really contributed to kind of the direction of the faculty in terms of kind of understanding these student experiences, but also thinking about what, you know, what we could do to action the recommendations that were put forward by the students who were kind of taking part in the focus groups, but also the students who led as researchers.
Amazing stuff. I mean, there's so many things in that, you know, answer you just gave that we could, I mean, we are going to kind of pull them apart a bit more. But if we go back right to the start, where you, before you even recruited to students, what motivated you and or inspired you to take this project or to undertake this particular project?
Yeah, so there's probably three areas. I think the first part for me really was the fact that we had kind of a student experience strategy, but there was almost a gap, I felt, between the strategic kind of vision, but also what those student experiences were. I guess the biggest caveat is that I joined the team in the summer of 2021, and kind of in that autumn, we thought, you know, COVID was over, the pandemic was done, and we were coming back to university as normal, also we thought. And so actually that wasn't, you know, the case around kind of belonging that students felt. And I think that's kind of a bigger conversation now. But at the time, our strategy was really around, you know, helping underrepresented students to feel welcome, supported, understood, heard and capable. But actually, that was quite a challenge for a lot of students from underrepresented backgrounds during the pandemic and post that. Because in my previous role, I kind of delivered lots of student facing events around kind of welcome and induction, and have lots of conversations actually with students. And sometimes actually, this wasn't their story. They didn't actually feel like King's was a place that they felt welcomed or supported. And so it was important really for this project to begin to unpack some of those experiences and really understand from students what was happening. But I guess on the numerical side, when we think about the data, that was also, I think, another turning point really for me in wanting to undertake this project, was that actually kind of looking at awarding gaps kind of before this project began, we found that actually kind of at the level of the first class degree, we saw in our faculty specifically that students from Black, Asian and minority ethnic backgrounds were 11.2% less likely to receive a first class degree as compared to their white counterparts. And then when you kind of looked at that combined 2-1 and first, there was the gap there was about 3.4%, and that was in 2020-2021. But then kind of in 2021-2022, this awarding gap then grew again. So we had like that data piece that was really showing us actually that, you know, students weren't thriving academically in this space. And then I'd say the last part really was kind of my own student experience. So in the pandemic, I was actually doing a master's in psychology and education at the University of Cambridge. And that was a very interesting time to be studying. And I think definitely gave me a very empathetic perspective when I kind of came into working in higher education, really, because I'd just, yeah, been a student myself doing my MPhil. But I think being also a Black heritage student, a home student during my undergraduate degree, and coming from a widening participation background, there's a lot I knew around like the, you know, those qualitative student experiences. But I think when I was doing my MPhil, I was able to kind of become a researcher as a student and get involved actually in lots of different things around student co-creation, around awarding gaps and around postgraduate access. So I kind of seen actually how students could be involved and could engage in such work. And that was definitely something I was looking and hoping to replicate, kind of understanding the student data, you know, the student experience, and thinking about how could we bring those two things together.
Amazing stuff. And I mean, you've highlighted three key parts of your motivation to do this project. And I myself really resonate with what you said on the final point, because I myself is from an ethnic minority. I'm a home student, and I completely get that feeling of just, it's difficult, I think. It's really difficult to explain because I've grown up in the British culture. I've kind of absorbed and embraced that my white counterpart is what I'm used to, but then going into university, it's like, okay, it's great there are these diverse students out there, but it still feels very strange in a way that I'm kind of stuck in the middle. It's like my background may resonate those who are from a more international students or background, but actually because I've grown up in the educational system here in the UK, it feels like I'm stuck, and I completely understand that. And I kind of now moving away from a student to now transitioning into that academic role, but it's a challenge of how I'm placing myself, or where am I placed, or who I am, or who am I actually? I think really interesting, and I think that's what sparked me when I read your paper. So thank you so much for sharing that, Tamara. And then it's 100% back up with you in terms of that there is this need, but we are not doing enough. I mean, we are doing things now, but it needs to be a bit better. But again, I mean, you and I know that the higher education system is so complex that there's so many things to do before we can get to that point. So 100% well done on doing this project. You also mentioned that you work with a very large group of students, 10 students. And I mean, wow, getting 1 to 2 is struggling, right? I think for myself, but 10, amazing. I mean, what was your experience of working with them? I mean, how did you recruit those 10 students to stay with you for the whole duration and then publishing a paper together?
Yeah, honestly, I had a fantastic experience. And I think in terms of like the initial recruitment, we had so many students that applied. I think we had between 70 and 80 students who applied because it was a paid position. The roles kind of began in October and we kind of started recruitment quite early. I want to say kind of just post exams, like between June and August, we kind of recruited, but had kind of put some stuff on social media ahead of then so students could kind of keep their eye out. But working kind of in a student experience team, I also supported our kind of faculty newsletters that was able to kind of promote that way. But yeah, students had kind of applications to write, and then we managed to kind of shortlist students. And then they had kind of a short presentation to deliver in interviews for those who were shortlisted. And I think in terms of the panel for that, I think one thing I really wanted to do was kind of bring staff in that would be working with students on this project. So we had kind of student experience managers, those who kind of worked in the wellbeing space, EDI officers, EDI leads, kind of from different departments. Also, I wanted the kind of interview process to also be like a beneficial experience, because a lot of the students were so passionate, and even if they, you know, weren't successful, there were still other opportunities. So for all of those who applied and weren't successful, they still had opportunities to then actually be part of the focus groups, which were also paid. So there were students who were kind of able to engage in the work at different levels. And then in terms of the students who kind of, you know, were our kind of final 10 co-researchers, they were all just so amazing, so passionate, and already had been doing so much stuff in this space. But I think the project allowed them an opportunity to kind of further hone those skills, you know, to be student leaders in kind of leading focus groups. They had kind of training, kind of lead those focus groups. We also did lots of stuff around kind of safeguarding as well. I think that was something that was really important to me because I recognized that the conversations they were going to be having might, you know, might be difficult. There might be students who'd been talking about kind of incidents of racism, kind of in different teaching and learning contexts or outside of that. So I wanted to, you know, I had our like our faculty wellbeing and welfare advisor, but also one of our safeguarding leads kind of deliver a session on actually how do you safeguard yourself in this space? And also how do you kind of ensure that you're able to safeguard students? And as part of that, I ensured that kind of in each focus group, we had kind of a member of staff who kind of just sat in the background just in case they were, you know, the students needed any additional support around kind of safeguarding or signposting to kind of specific systems we have, such as kind of report and support. I think that was a really important part actually to ensure that those students also felt safe and were able to debrief appropriately after having maybe some difficult conversations. And I think in terms of the entire process, it was just really collaborative. You know, students were able to kind of help in designing the questions for the focus groups. We kind of started, I guess our methodology was really kind of action research. We started kind of in a forum space where we kind of spoke about their experiences, and they kind of brought together themes, then we kind of narrow those down together to kind of, you know, form the questions and the structure for the focus groups. And so after those focus groups, they were then able to kind of go away, you know, analyze the themes and pull together some either kind of specific recommendations for projects that we could kind of deliver in kind of the next 12 to 18 months, kind of at a faculty level, or areas where maybe we needed to do a bit more research to kind of understand or unpack some of these issues a bit more. And then students at the end of the project had an opportunity to kind of present their ideas to the same panel actually that sat on their interviews, which I think was quite a nice full circle moment. And then we managed to get some more funding actually after this project. And so those students were able to kind of, again, come and support kind of delivery of one of actually their project recommendations. And then, yeah, this opportunity to kind of be part of the publication. I think for me, that was a really important part for those co-researchers, for them to also, you know, be able to take this work away and say they were part of it. They led it, they helped deliver it. And for them to be able to put this on their CVs at the end of the day, because it's, I think we'll probably, yeah, unpack it a bit more, but I think co-creation really needs to be meaningful for students, especially when we're asking questions about their lived experience and their identities. You know, even to my point earlier on that safeguarding piece and ensuring that you have that space to allow them to debrief, I think is so important. Because sometimes, you know, we ask students to come and share their experience and, you know, we might use it for work, but we don't even feed back and ensure that students know how we've used it kind of beyond what we might have stipulated in kind of our consent forms, etc. But how do we ensure that these students are kept on the journey in a meaningful way, I think is really important. So, you know, even through like the publication and kind of we had lots of internal reports and internal ways in which the data was shared, that actually the students who took part in the focus groups, we ensured that, you know, we had their consent to kind of keep them in the loop around where we were at with the project, you know, the findings, the internal reports, etc. So I think that was also an important part for like the co-researchers, but those who also attended the focus groups, ensuring that they were kept as part of the journey the whole way through.
Mm-hmm. No, it sounds amazing that your students are not just students in your projects. They are actually co-researchers. You've highlighted the amount of students who expressed their interest. I mean, it's amazing that you got 70 to 80. And you mentioned that, of course, it's also a paid role. But aside from the financial aspects, do you think that students would still come forward if they say, if you advertise it in a way that was not a paid role?
I think yes. I think they definitely would have come forward. But I don't think that's the best way. I think when we're thinking about the fact that they're sharing, you know, some of those students shared like really like deep things. I say deep, I guess, to broadly mean like some of those, you know, were explicit experiences of racism. I think for this specific group, actually, for many students who spoke, they spoke about the fact that they hadn't met many students from similar backgrounds on their courses, that, you know, they were one of maybe 10 Black students on a course. And so actually these focus groups for them felt a bit therapeutic, an opportunity for them to meet other students. There were at least 3 focus groups where the students stood outside having conversations for another 20 to 30 minutes because they hadn't met, you know, through, you know, teaching and learning. I think particularly the timing. So yeah, this was 2022. And I think a lot of the students who engaged were in about second year or third year. So they would have had actually a lot of their teaching and learning taking place remotely. So all of our focus groups were in person. So that's also a key part. So I think that bit around kind of belonging and engagement kind of in the pandemic, I think so many students were keen to actually share their experience at that time. And so I think, yeah, it was important to actually pay students for their time and say, we value your time, we value your stories, and we value you sharing them with us.
100%, 100%, that we shouldn't just use students for the benefit of collecting data or getting to work on something. But as you highlighted, Tamara, it's all about giving them that meaningful and feeling, making them more valued at university. They're not just there to get a degree, yes, but it's all about the soft skills, those connections, those shared lived experiences, and like you mentioned, and from the paper, it's all about those connections, that finding other people who look like you or have the same backgrounds are very, like, important to succeed in life, not just at university. So definitely 100%. So if we move on to the kind of the key themes that you found from your project or the concepts that you explore, because I've noted that in your paper, there's a number of them. What would you say were the key significant results to the projects or to our higher educational space?
Yeah, I think the main thing I'd say initially is that I'd say the themes mapped on really to lots of papers in the sector, which I think is like actually quite important and helps us to kind of understand that. I think this work is also contributing to that broader literature. So I guess a couple of examples would be Hefke's 2015 report on the causes of awarding gaps, or the Universities UK 2019 closing the gap report in terms of themes. So, you know, I think in both of those papers, they talk about kind of teaching, learning and assessment, relationships between students and staff, lots of stuff around social, cultural and economic capital. And then they've also got psychological and identity factors. But then within this work, I'd say, you know, very similar themes. Lots of stuff came through around, you know, community and belonging, teaching and learning, and, you know, how diverse or not diverse curriculum was. You know, what were those seminar experiences as an example? But other things came up, such as, you know, confidence in accessing support and the extent to which students felt that, you know, the support services at university were for them or supported them. But then also lots of stuff around kind of navigating the hidden curriculum. So the unknown unknowns about university, you know, from the language and the processes to, you know, how we assume students will know what a tutorial is or what office hours are without those explicit explanations. But lots of stuff also around kind of university preparedness and, you know, to the earlier point around capital, you know, what kinds of networks do students have before they begin university, and to what extent do they have, you know, people in their lives who have maybe, you know, been through university before, who understand, you know, the language, the processes, who can support them once they're there. But equally, what does this mean for students who have additional priorities outside of, you know, their academic life, such as, you know, being a carer, you know, or having to look after siblings, etc. And what does this mean in terms of actually how differently students are able to navigate university, and what that experience might look like for them as well?
So I'm just curious now, because from those results you gathered, or from the lived experience from those students, were there any situations where some students got really sad or really uncomfortable? And what did you do to overcome that? Because I'm sure sharing about their lived experience can be a bit more challenging for some than others. Mm-hmm. So in those situations, what did you do?
Yeah, so there were definitely instances. And I guess I will say there were also positive examples that came out that I can touch on a bit later. But I'd say in terms of like the most negative experiences, definitely, you know, students who'd spoken about experiences of racism in seminars where that had been, you know, either acknowledged or not acknowledged by teaching staff, you know, either from students or, you know, other people who in the space as well. I think the key thing in all of those spaces, I guess, why I mentioned at the start around kind of the importance of having that session around safeguarding, was that our students who were leading the sessions knew how to handle those conversations. And obviously we had kind of staff support, but we kind of then had conversations around actually, you know, you can still report this if you have experienced something negative. These are the processes. These are where you can seek additional support if you feel like actually you want to access, you know, the university counselling or mental health service. So a lot of it was definitely speaking about kind of what signposting resources are available at the institution that they can tap into. But also, I guess it on in terms of like the longer term, when this work and these experiences were fed back to faculty, you know, we were able to have conversations that, you know, these things are happening here. How can we think about, you know, inclusive teaching more broadly, but also how can we recognize that the student experience also happens outside of the classroom, and where is our role and how do we operate in supporting that? So for instance, students also spoke about clubs and societies and challenges there, and not knowing, you know, what the reporting mechanisms were as relate to that, but really they're the same. So actually a lot of it was around trying to clarify for students how they use these processes and that they can use these processes anonymously also if they wanted to instead.
Mm-hmm. So what about like on the flip side, I mean, for those listeners for on this podcast, no, they might be academics or in the professional services. And I think one key point that I feel when I was reading your paper is the lack of in diverse resources in terms of teaching materials. And as we know, that students are like the consumers of university. But do you think it's a lack of training that academics or the teaching staff are receiving, or is it a student problem?
Yeah, I think honestly, it's about inclusive education. I think that is and should be the response. And I think there's lots of work that's going on at King's now to really speak to this. And part of inclusive education is, you know, that conversation around decolonizing curriculum. Part of inclusive education is also thinking about how do we allow students to feel like they belong, you know, at university as well. So yeah, part of it is teaching and learning, and part of it is that bigger belonging piece that sits outside of the classroom. But as an example from this paper, there was a student who spoke about, you know, positive experiences where an academic had asked them or asked the students actually to bring in, this was in philosophy as an example, you know, bring in to the next seminar philosophies from your culture, from your country. Let's have a conversation about them. So also thinking about student co-creation in those ways, how can you work with students in teaching and learning to kind of make your resources more diverse, more representative of students from across the globe, really. You know, that allows us to think about the international student experience as well, as well as, you know, students from Black, Asian and minority ethnic backgrounds who are home students. Actually, how can we be inclusive in the broadest way possible, I think is so important. It was great that we had some examples of where that was done well and actually how students felt like they were able to contribute and be involved. And I think at King's, and I would assume also at other institutions, in thinking about kind of changing the teaching and learning piece, why not pay students to support you? Why not pay students to kind of go through your reading list and say, actually, this isn't working, or this is outdated, or actually, could we think about incorporating this from a different lens? So even actually one of the projects that came out of the Ethnicity Award and Gap project was around revisiting our offer holder resources and thinking about actually how inclusive are these. Do we actually have a list of resources that, you know, for instance, a book that's only available in two libraries in London? What does that mean for a student who's not in London? What does that mean for a student who maybe can't get to the library for different reasons? Maybe there's a great documentary that, you know, would allow them to kind of get an insight into this before they come to the institution that would actually be more accessible. So sometimes the answer is actually our students and allow them to help you do these things, because I don't think it's necessary for lack of passion or lack of desire, I think, from academic colleagues. I think the big thing really is, you know, time and resources and lots of conflicting priorities. So actually, when you can work with students and allow, you know, pay them to support you to do this work, students love to get involved and love to also know that they're able to contribute to their learning and teaching experience in, yeah, a meaningful way, as I've said before. So I think that's it. Inclusive curriculum and allow students to help where you can through kind of paid opportunities.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's a very good example you mentioned about, you know, in the philosophy example you shared, just asking students to bring something from their culture. I'm definitely going to borrow that for my own discipline. Let's see. But if we move on the conversation in terms of the data you've done and looking into the future, were there anything that resulted from the project that you would want to carry forward into your future work?
This piece around student co-creation is definitely at the heart of what I do now, kind of in my new role. I'm less student facing now, but where there are opportunities kind of within my team and to support them in delivering that, that's a big part of what we do. So I guess I mentioned earlier that we're kind of in the process at King's going through our access and participation plan. And so as part of that, we're thinking about, you know, what specific interventions will we want to develop or further enhance and within our department. Yeah, we've got a program called Conversations About Race that is an opportunity really for students and staff to speak out race and racism in higher education in terms of their own lived experience, but also in terms of what that might mean for students kind of navigating King's or just navigating society at large, kind of thinking about the fact that, you know, higher education might be an instance where they experience these things, but also how can we prepare students for the world of work. You know, racism exists in the workplace, and actually sometimes these conversations are helpful to allow students and staff to think about that broader context, for staff maybe even thinking about their colleagues as well in this space. And so where we do have opportunities for students to be part of those projects, we do. So this is a project where kind of students can be paid again to be part of it. But then in the other side of the department, we also have kind of student leadership opportunities where students can kind of do some work placements and different kinds of things, and work with kind of community partners and get involved in like the local King's community, as well as community partners who kind of operate nearby or kind of locally to our vicinity. So yeah, I'd say student co-creation is still at the heart of what I do in my current role, and even in kind of thinking about new projects we might be scoping, maybe more targeted or tailored intervention. And then I'd say collaboration really with other teams and departments at King. So the hope really kind of in the next 12 months, we've begun working more closely with our widening participation team and kind of supporting and thinking about how we better support, you know, those students when they arrive at the institution, and really help to kind of better support that transition. You know, there's lots of students often sometimes through widening participation programs who are actually surprised by the lack of diversity when they, you know, actually come into higher education, because maybe they've come from places in London or other countries or cultures that are far more diverse, and then they arrive at the institution that they're surprised actually that it's not as diverse. So I think there's also a lot that we're hoping to do actually around bridging that gap between expectations and reality, and, you know, preparing students for the context of higher education. What will they experience, you know, as best as you can prepare them in terms of, you know, even that piece around navigating the hidden curriculum, like how can we begin to break down some of those language or process barriers before students arrive at university, but also how can we do that once they do get here as well?
I mean, it's a long bucket list you've got there, Tamara, on everything that you want to do. I mean, it's all doable, isn't it? If time is not a barrier, resources and financial, all these things are not a barrier. Yeah. I mean, maybe to round off this session then, it's like, if colleagues are listening to this podcast, wondering how they can do something similar in their own institution in widening participation, specifically for ethnic minority students, what would your advice be if they're thinking, oh, I want to do this, but I don't know how to start? What would be, say, your Tamara's top tip?
Top tips. I'd say the first one is really ensure that co-creation is meaningful. I feel like I've mentioned that a lot, but I think meaningful means that, you know, you're really considering the amount of time, you know, students are going to be contributing to this work. Or, you know, maybe you've got quite a short time scale, so, you know, how are you thinking about what that might mean for students in terms of adapting their timetables to commit to this work? But also, you know, maybe if you've got co-researchers and those who are engaging in focus groups, how can you ensure that you ensure that those students know how you've used their data, like beyond the project, beyond the presentations, you know, whether that's kind of circulating things internally, or, you know, you ask them when you're kind of completing those initial consent forms, are you happy for us to share your data and keep you, you know, periodically posted around updates and outcomes? Because I think sometimes obviously the student time in the institution is only, you know, at a minimum 3 years, sometimes maybe shorter, maybe longer. And so actually, if a student is part of your project in their first year, maybe, you know, the realization or how this comes to fruition doesn't happen until they're in their third year. Let them know. I think that's such an important thing, that sometimes we begin doing the work once we have those recommendations, but we don't go back to students and say, you know, this is how we're, you know, implementing what you suggested, or this is how we're hoping to change things in future. So yeah, really ensure co-creation is meaningful. Please safeguard students in the process, especially if you're trying to have difficult conversations. Ensure that you kind of bring in staff who work in this area, whether it's kind of a well-being lead, a welfare lead, a safeguarding officer, either to kind of deliver training or support you to deliver training, and ensure that students know, you know, how they can encourage other people to seek support if kind of you're leaving them to kind of lead those focus groups, but also they know, you know, if they need to seek that additional support, that they can. So yeah, all of that obviously is probably going to be included in kind of debriefing processes and procedures, but I'd say that's a really important one. And then, yeah, lastly, I'd say, yeah, just continue to work with students and not just on their behalf. Co-creation is important. And I think to your point earlier, Q, around students being our consumers, if we're not considering what the consumers of higher education need, want, we're doing them a disservice. You know, they're paying lots of money. And if we're just doing things on their behalf without allowing them to be part of that process, we could be completely missing the mark. So where you can, patience and, like, yeah, support them to help you fulfill those goals, really.
Amazing stuff. So Tamara, with all my podcast episodes, I end with a fun part where I have a few questions. They are a quick short firing round for our listeners and for myself to know you a bit more. These are questions about yourself, so that's why I haven't given you them to prepare in advance. But are you ready?
Yes, I'm ready. Let's go.
So first question is, what would be your favourite superpower?
Oh, favourite superpower? I think definitely time travel. I feel like I'm a planner by nature, so if I could see what was coming, I'd completely love that.
What do you do to recharge your energy after a long, stressful day of work?
I like to read. I'm an avid reader, so I've always got a book in my bag for my commutes, but I have a bit more time. I like booking holidays.
Don't we all? What's the book you're reading currently?
The book I'm reading currently is actually called To My Sisters. It's a book about sisterhood and the power of friendships.
Oh, nice. It's very relevant to your co-creation work, actually.
Yeah.
What's your favourite movie?
Oh, favourite movie. I feel like I don't have a favourite movie, but I have a favourite movie genre. I love action movies. So I'm a big fan of all the Marvel movies. I wouldn't say I have a favourite one, but yeah, anytime there's one out, I'm always there to see it.
Amazing. Other than your phone, your laptop or any technology, what would be the one best thing to carry around to show students and or colleagues in corridors on campus?
Oh, that's a great question.
I mean, what do you normally carry around? That's the question.
Yeah, what do I normally carry around? If I'm honest, I usually have a notebook and a pen. And I feel like often it's usually just to capture people's thoughts and make sure I'm not, you know, where possible, I'm able to follow up and stuff. So if that's a student who's trying to find an event or find out, you know, more information, it might be that's a great opportunity to just jot down their email address. Like, it's quite a practical answer, but that's usually what I've got with me, a notebook and a pen.
Amazing stuff. What is your hidden talent?
Oh, hidden talent. I would probably say cooking. I really enjoy cooking lots of different food. I think to my original point around traveling, I love to eat. So I travel often to try new foods and then I come home and I'm like, right, how do I make that?
I mean, what would be your tomorrow's dish? If it's like everyone's listening to this and like, what can we get if we're going to tomorrow's?
Probably Thai food. I spent over a month in Thailand many years ago, and so if I've ever got an opportunity, it's definitely Thai food, whether it's like noodles or Thai curry. Yeah, definitely my favorite thing to make.
What is your favorite music genre?
Oh, favorite music genre, I'd definitely say probably I'm a Christian, so Christian gospel music of any kind, really. I'm big fan of modern Christian music.
What would be your alternative career that you secretly wish you had but never actually pursued?
Oh, I think I'd like to be a food critic. I feel like, you know, be able to try lots of new food for free.
On holiday, you mean?
A blog. On holiday, exactly. That would be perfect. So travel for food. Great weather, new food. Yeah, that would be me.
Amazing stuff. Who is or are your favourite learning and teaching hero or heroes?
Oh, favourite learning and teaching heroes. That's a great question. I think at the moment, I'll be, yeah, quite sector specific. I feel like the University, Manchester Metropolitan are doing lots of great stuff. I'd say there are lots of academics who are doing fantastic things there, and I keep looking at all their work and I'm like, I want to do this or try and do this at King's.
And finally, because our podcast is called The Education Burrito, what's your favourite burrito fillings?
Oh, that's a good question. Favourite burrito fillings? I think I usually go for like a pulled pork. Yeah, pulled pork, maybe some like chimichurri. some chili sauce.
Got Thai stuff in there, yeah, and go on holiday.
Exactly.
I'm visualising this. Well, that's all we have time for in this episode. If our listeners want to find out a bit more about what you do, Tamara, how can they do so?
You can find me on LinkedIn, under my name, Tamara Kofi. And yeah, kind of post updates around kind of work and different opportunities I'm getting involved with there. So that's the best place to find me.
Again, a big, massive thank you to you, Tamara Kofi, for sharing with us your project on ethnic awarding gap and its importance of continuing to have these conversations in higher education. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for your time and tuning into the Education Burrito. Make sure to hit the subscribe button on whichever platform you're listening on, and be sure to like it and share it on social media, tagging us at the hashtag TheEducationBurrito. If you have enjoyed our chat today and fancy coming onto the show, whether as a student or a member of staff, well, do drop us a message as we unwrap learning and teaching in the Education Burrito.